And I wanted to tell you how great your show was on Monday. You had a guest, another professor from the University of Illinois, the law professor. He hit it out of the park. There were things that I heard that really blew me away. Thank you so much for your show. It really gave me a new perspective on the whole Russia stealing the election thing. I never knew the background of Mueller and Comey. Very fascinating. Very, very, very fascinating. Anyway, thank you so much for all you do. Bye.
Thanks, Gene, and thanks to all of our listeners of Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Take care.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. Our guest host and senior producer is Kevin Pina. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at DennisJBernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 11 a.m. We received some feedback that in trying to regain the stream, we had actually missed an important segment, important part of Norbert Friedman's conversation with her guest. So you can find the whole thing and make sure you get all of it at flashpoints.net, just as Mr. Pino had told us. Thank you so much for listening. Coming up on the Radio Zine, Between Us, an interview with local artist, I'm going to guess it's Sadie, even though it's spelled the same as the singer Sade Beasley, whose work honors Black women's strength and femininity. That's all coming up right after these important community announcements, so stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Open Source Bridge Conference, June 20th to 23rd at the Elliott Center in Portland. Open Source Bridge is a conference for developers working with open source technologies and for people interested in learning the open source way. The conference has 5 tracks connecting people across projects, languages, and backgrounds to explore open source. Again, that's the Open Source Bridge Conference, June 20th to 23rd at the Elliott Center, 1226 Southwest Salmon Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, this is John Schuck for Progressive Spirit. This week, I speak with Justin Dillon. He's the founder and CEO of Made in a Free World that has fueled the global anti-slavery movement. We'll talk about that and his new book, A Selfish Plan to Change the World, Finding Big Purpose in Big Problems.
Hundreds of years from now, people will look back at this generation and go, you knew it all, you had it all. Did you do something with it?
Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
Tony Faustin has opened it so I can talk with a local artist who is sharing her work.
Okay. But Tony, why did you invite Sade in to display her art here in your space?
Well, I met Sade at one of her sorority sister events, and I've seen her artwork. A young sister, you know, I've got wife, I've got a mother, I've got daughters, I've got sisters, and just seeing, powerful Black women doing their thing, it just kind of, it has a good spot for me. It's giving me a good feeling more than anything to support, you know. I asked her if she was interested in, you know, showing at my winery. And the other thing about my winery, and not just, you know, for black or brown folks or anything, I want to be a stepping stone to give people opportunities that I didn't get or have. I have this leverage, this business that I can do that for folks, you know, and not many of us have that. You know, so I figured, why not give her a chance and opportunity? I'm always down to giving people who are worthy a chance. It's up to them whether they, you know, what do they do with it? You know, and she's come through it and shined, you know, and I didn't even realize, you know, this was her first actual showing, you know, and how selfless is she, because all of the other art she would do is donated to charities and they make the money off of, you know. So I think it's about time to, you know, let her get some for her. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we give selflessly because, you know, that's what we want to do, to see a better world or make change. But there's nothing wrong with you being taken care of as well. So,
Sade Beasley is a 23-year-old black woman who may very well qualify for a MacArthur Genius Grant someday, in part because she has a hustle that has taken her from civil engineering to business management to computer science. But today, we're talking about her art. So, Sade, one of the first things I wanted to ask you is, how did you get into art? I mean, because, you know, looking at some of your online stuff, it looks like you started out with an interest in civil engineering. And, mm-hmm. and then you seem to have picked up art along the way, and then art seemed to become one of your main things. How'd that happen?
Yeah, so actually I started art when I was very young. I was in Head Start, so I was around the age of five, and my father is Tlingit, which is an Eskimo tribe, Alaskan tribe in Anchorage. And I grew up seeing him sketch and paint and draw, and it inspired me to do it as well. So at a young age, I had a pen in my hand or pencil and paints, and I was trying to be like my father. And just growing up, people would call me all sorts of names, like the copy machine, and, oh, okay, she's the artist. She's going to have a gallery when she grows up. And so something that always stayed close to me, my mom put me into a bunch of after-school programs where I was able to do artwork. One of my pieces, I was in the program Art Up. It was led by Kathy Swaback. And
now, was that like a private program, a school-associated program?
It was just an after-school program for a selected group of girls. There was about eight of us, and low-income youth were able to participate in it.
What grade were you? What?
I was in middle school at the time. Okay. I went to Fernwood Middle School.
Okay.
And I got into this program, and my first piece was painting a 7-foot panel of Beatrice Kennedy and Elizabeth Gatlett. Those were two women who I was inspired by looking at pictures. I didn't really know much of them at the time, but I got to read more into them, and I felt like I had connected with them, especially Elizabeth Gatlett, because she's a sculptor and a painter. And I put them on these panels, and later it went on a tour. And
did you know it was going to go on a tour?
No, I didn't. As a kid, I was just happy to be able to go to a program after school and create. And now it's at the Avell Gordley Head Start. And I'm still in connection with Avell Gordley, and we still talk about my art till this day, which is crazy, now being in college.
Now, Avell Gordley is who?
Avell Gordley is the first African-American senator of Oregon.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So fast forward to today. We'll fast forward to the adult era. I was reading in Oregon, the Oregonian, where you won a beauty contest in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought that when you were receiving the award and getting the praise from all of your co-students, from all of your peers, you thought that they were laughing at you. You didn't think that they were supporting you.
Yeah, and I attended Benson High School, and I felt like an underdog throughout that whole Rose Festival.
Now explain that a little bit.
Yeah, so I felt like an odd student and just an odd girl growing up, and I was very quiet and shy. And I didn't much make connections with people. I wasn't seen as the popular girl. I was made fun of a lot, whether it was for my hair. I didn't really know how to manage it. It was always in an afro, or and a lot of the girls, the standard of beauty was you have it flat ironed, you wear makeup, and that was things that I wore baggy clothes as well. And so I never felt like I was that popular girl who people looked up to. And my senior year, I decided that I was going to change that for myself, my self-esteem, and I applied. I applied to Rose Festival, to be a Rose Festival princess for Benson High School. And I went through a series of trials through that, and I remember going up to speak in front of the whole school. And it's where you're saying, pick me for this position because I'm going to best represent you. And I felt like the underdog because people in school would say, oh, we already know who's going to win. None of these other girls, you know, I don't understand why they're even competing. And I went up and I had practiced this speech in my sleep. I was so excited for it. And I got up and kids were laughing. Students were laughing at me. And they didn't think that, they were just like, why is she up there? And I remember finishing my speech. I didn't mess up or anything. I had so much passion. And at the end of it, there were students who would come up to me and tell me their stories. My whole speech was about rocking your own rose, because that was the theme that year, was rocking roses.
Right.
And rocking who you are and your individuality and being true to yourself. And also talking on bullying. And there was so many girls and guys who came up to me at the end and told me their stories. And at that point, I mean, they were laughing at me, but then at that point, I knew that they did it because of either they've seen it happen in other spaces within school where they thought, oh, okay, she's just gonna be made fun of, you know, this is how we feel about her. But until you get to really know a person, you don't know what who they are, what they, you know, hold in them. And so I definitely changed my perception, I feel like, of what people thought of me just by going up and being vulnerable and showing who I was.
You made a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at some of your social media, like on Pinterest. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of different interests. You have not only art, but style,
mm-hmm.
Social justice,
yep.
Stiletto nails.
Yes.
So right now art is the big thing for you,
mm-hmm.
but you do have several, you have like a double major, I think.
Mm. So I started after Rose Festival and finishing graduating at Benson. I enrolled at Oregon State University studying civil engineering with a double major in art, fine art.
I saw you had a minor in art.
Yes. I had a double major in both of them. And because I was told when I was doing Rose Festival that I wasn't able to complete both of them.
Who told you that?
So for the Rose Festival, there was a panel. And there was an intern who was also on the panel working for Rose Festival. And I said, they had asked me, you know, what is it that you want to do when you go to college? And I said, for college, I want to major in civil engineering and I want to major in art. And I want to do both. I want to be an artist and I want to be an engineer. And they said, well, those are two completely opposite things. You'll never finish school. That's something, you know, and I took from that, I was like, you know, I want to do a social experiment with that. I applied to Oregon State University with two degrees, one going into engineering, one going into fine art. When I received both of my applications back for financial aid, engineering was paid for. I didn't have to worry about financially struggling through college and doing studies at the same time, versus with my fine art, I didn't get any scholarships. And so from that, I thought, you know, how can this work? And I ended up keeping a major in engineering. I dropped fine arts about halfway through because of the demands of engineering. And then my advisors were telling me, you're going to have to drop it. There's no way that you can do both and get out of here in a reasonable amount of time. When I talked to one of my art instructors, she said, keep your engineering, because there's this daunting voice in a lot of artists' head where it's like, you will always be a starving artist.
Poverty mentality.
Yeah, poverty mentality. And so she said, you know, keep your engineering, and you're already really good at art. You have that that vision and the creativity and the color, and it's your style. You know, you're not coming in here learning how to create a style for yourself. You already have that. So do your art on the side and work on that, build it up. You know, take classes here and there, but keep your major in engineering. So that's what I had did at Oregon State University. Then I left. I came back to Portland, and I worked for a while. I did construction.
Construction. So
yes,
talk about that just
I did
a
construction.
Little bit.
So I still had a passion for civil engineering. I thought, you know, I would love to be out working, building buildings, and constructing roadways, and designing. That was my big thing. And I'm also a very tactile and hands-on person. So I said, wow, you know, I want to manually do everything from the ground up. And so I looked into the construction fields. And at the time, I found industrial painter positions. I thought, well, I know how to paint, you know, two different things. But so I got a few certificates. I went to the IBW Electrical Training Center. I got my material handler certificate. And then from there, I worked for Painting Oregon and worked on a whole bunch of different projects. One of my favorite projects that I worked on was sandblasting, which is where you're picking up 100-pound bags of sand, you're putting them in this machine, and then it blasts out. It cleans the machinery that you need, and then they can go in and spray paint it. So I did a lot of prep work during that. I decided to go back to school. And
so you came back to Portland?
Yes, came back to Portland. And now I'm majoring in business administration, management, and leadership. And I did that for a number of reasons, but the main reason was to be grounded in a business mindset. I have art. I love doing art, but how do you market yourself? People can have all sorts of skills, but if you don't have the business savviness behind it, it's hard for you to get your work out there or know how to properly run a business. So I decided to do that. I also got a scholarship to help me pay the rest of my college off. And then,
what was the scholarship for?
I have a diversity scholarship with Portland State University, so they pay for all my tuition.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I am doing just business administration right now. And then my plan is to go into computer science, a computer science master's program after I finish with my business degree in spring 18.
So you finished the civil engineering degree?
No, I didn't finish. So I have, I came from Benson and had to start at the very bottom when it came to math and science. I wasn't necessarily strong in it. And so that full year I was doing all preparatory math and sciences, and then getting into the second year, I finally got into my calculus, my physics, and then that's when I left. I did a few engineering courses. I liked it. I enjoyed doing those courses. But I came back to Portland to help with my mom and just feel grounded again. When I left, I felt like, wow, I feel actually far away from home. And for me, being the first to go to college in my family, it was something totally different for me. And so I needed more family support and came back. And I didn't necessarily leave engineering. I mean, when I enrolled into Portland State University, I took a few engineering courses, more so in electrical engineering and computer engineering. I wanted to see, you know, what my other options were instead of saying, you know, civil is where it's at. And decided, wow, I really enjoyed working on computers and programming. I took a few introductory computer science courses. I worked with Python and I worked with C++ and MATLAB, and I really enjoyed being able to program and make something come to life through technology.
So let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I just want to make sure I'm clear about this in my mm-hmm. own mind. So you said you went away, but then you came back to Portland. So where did you go? Did you leave
State? I went to Oregon State University.
Okay, so you went to
Corvallis,
a different part
Oregon.
Of the state.
Yes. Okay. Yes. First time. I've never traveled, so that was the first time I'd actually gone somewhere else than Portland, and I've gone to Vancouver, but I think it just over time I was missing that home, right. You know, feeling. I felt kind of isolated out there, so I decided to come back.
Okay. Let's talk about some of your art. We're here at Bertone's winery, and he has given us the space for a few minutes. And you've got a showing of looks like maybe a dozen pieces, maybe 10 or 12 pieces. So I wanted to ask you. I mean, describe your style, because it seems like your pieces almost have sort of like a mosaic quality to mm-hmm. them. What is it about the way you create art that gives your pieces this kind of look? And I'll be posting some pictures to go along with this interview on the KBOO website.
For me, I feel that my art encompasses attitude. It encompasses beauty, and not an ideal standard of beauty. For me, when I did my pieces, I wanted all skin colors to show through. So when you look at my art, you'll see different shades of brown. You'll see even pitch black, you know, and then a tan, very light skin color tones. And so I go throughout the spectrum of skin color because every skin color, in my opinion, is beautiful as a black woman. And growing up, that was always something that, you know, as a light-skinned girl, I was made fun of for being light-skinned. And then my friend, who's dark-skinned, was, you know, made fun of for being dark-skinned. And so for me, I wanted to blend all these women together and have an assortment of skin colors. And I feel like that also brings its edginess, and it's just like, wow, like you can look into a piece and go, I see myself in that, no matter, you know, what color you are. And
I just want to say, for listeners yeah. who want to get a better understanding of the light skin, dark skin issue among black folks, check out Spike Lee's School Days.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So which one of these pieces do you consider to be your favorite?
Ooh, that's a hard one.
I mean, I know that's like, you know, asking to choose among your children, but
I know. I call all of these my ladies, and I connect so much with them because for each one, I see myself in each piece that I do. And then I spend a lot of time with them as well. I spend about 13 to 15 hours with each of them, painting them. But if I had to pick which one, oh, that's so hard. I would say that it is Giona, and it's Wear Your Skin with Pride.
Right. I see the thing about this piece, as opposed to a lot of the other pieces, her arms are up, and she is exposing a lot of skin.
Yes. So this piece is all about showing out and who she is with her natural hair. She's got her afro out. She's got her face in the air, which with a lot of the other ones, they're facing us. And so for this piece, it just feels like a total power piece. And she's comfortable. She's got this type of attitude where it's like, I can do anything that I want to do. And I also played off with her warm skin tone, with the warm chestnut brown being the majority of her skin, and then doing the reds and the oranges in the back with the turquoise and the purples on her shirt, and it counteracting each other and just bringing more emotion in the piece.
So when you say that you see a little bit of yourself in each one of these pieces, is that something that you had to come to? I mean, is that an attitude for yourself that you had to sort of like grow within yourself?
Oh, yes. And you can see that within the pieces as well. If you look at Where Do I Start? Dillard, this is the first piece where I said, you know what, I want to actually start a body of work. For me, I'd always did commission pieces. I did things for other people. I never did anything really for myself. And so this, she started it. And it's that uncomfortable feeling, you know, like, where do I start with all of this?
Right. I can see that mm-hmm. She's in a defensive position.
Yes.
She's sort of holding herself.
Mm-hmm. She's holding herself.
She's not open like the other one.
Yes. So this is where it started, where she's more closed off, and it's like, you know, where do I go from here, and who am I? And then you'll see as these pieces progress that they do become more, not only lifelike, because as you can see, the first pieces are more more statuesque. They have more sharp lines. You can see that more in the face, mm-hmm. whereas with her body, it's more fluid.
Right.
And then as it continues, and then you get onto this, these other pieces, there's less harsh lines as far as across the face. I know that I love masks. I look at a lot of Bundu masks, and I made it more fluid, and
more lifelike.
Yeah, more lifelike, and even with the newest pieces that you see down here, their eyes now are open.
Right, I noticed mm-hmm. that I think it was one of your Facebook posts, or maybe it was on a Instagram post. Mm-hmm. You were talking about eyes, how
yes.
the eyes are open.
Yeah, how the eyes are open. So in the first pieces that I did, they're closed, and I don't even know how I got the style of eye, but I put a line through them as if they were closed, and then now they have kind of a jagged edge going throughout pattern throughout the eye. And I have this sharp white eyelashes and marker on top. And with these new pieces, their eyes are open. I had watched the movie Get Out, directed by Jordan Peele, and the eyes within the movie got to me, and there was so much emotion in this one scene in Get Out where he's sitting in the chair, and there's this mother in there who
this isn't a spoiler, is it?
Yeah, this definitely
okay,
is.
We better not say it.
But anywho, so the eyes in that movie really got me, and I wanted to open my ladies up. I wanted to make them more vulnerable, and also for me, it was moving on to moving forward in a sense. So all of my pieces, I do my best to continue to move on in working on my skill set instead of staying at one thing, because I feel like it's easy for someone to create a good piece and then stick with it.
Right. So you're saying part of the consistency of working as an artist is being, you know, on track, always creating new things.
Yes. I feel like an artist should always reinvent themselves.
You know, I wanted to ask you about this piece, because this is your newest piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw online you called this Afro Puffs.
Yeah.
I think this is my favorite piece, and I don't know why, but it sort of just reminds me of growing up on the block.
Yep. Having two Afro Puffs. Yep.
Hair.
Yep. This is becoming my new style, and it's crazy because I did the eyes within these last two pieces, and for this one, I said, wow, I remember as a kid just having these huge Afro Puffs, and it's also a style that's coming back too, you'll see in a lot of women, and for me, this is my hair. And that's why I blocked it off from the nose down, and then you just, her hair is like the main, it takes up most of the painting.
Yeah, about 80, 90% of the picture.
Yeah.
So are you sending a message to women, because there's no men here.
No, there is no men.
And so, I mean, are you sending a message to women about what it is to be a woman? Are you sending a message to society about what it means to be a black woman? I mean, what are you saying?
So when I did these pieces, it was more so to send out the message of, you know, black beauty. And I go against the notion that black, you know, is beautiful. And I feel like we're attacked a lot in the media. I feel like anywhere you go, you can see negative comments on of what a black woman is, what a black woman looks like. And for me, I wanted to fill a space like this space. I wanted to be able to bring these women out and to take over and dominate a space with versatility. You see that with their hair. You see that with their skin tones. And you see it with their attitudes that they bring through the piece. And so for me, if it was sending out any message, it would be that we are beautiful.
I wanted to ask you basically how you've had to deal with that kind of pressure within our own community. Because you had mentioned earlier, you start out in civil engineering, now it's business administration and computer science. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have had the experience of you want to go outside of what people traditionally expect you to do and be, you get pressure, as in to say, you shouldn't do that. You know, we don't really do that. You know, we do other stuff.
Yeah. going into engineering, I actually at first was more so pressured by my family to do it because it would bring in more income. But for me, art was my passion. I wanted to do art, but I'm also a practical thinker. So for me, it was like, I can do engineering. And then also, I feel and believe that the reason that I never was even interested in engineering was because growing up, no one ever expected that of me. In my math classes, I took, you know, remedial math classes, and no one ever had said, wow, I see potential in you. This is where you should be at, and we can work on that. It was the same for the sciences. And so for me, I never had that spark or that interest to get into it. And then I got into a TRIO program at Oregon State University for math, and I absolutely loved it. And we worked from the bottom, worked up, and in math, and I saw how good I was in it. I ended up loving math, and I've taken like all my calculus series, and I've gotten A's in all of them, and I understand the material. I said, wow, like, I'm bad, I can do it, you know. And it was the same with computer programming. I didn't even know about computer programming until my spring term of last year. And so when I got into computer programming and doing the intro courses, I said, wow, like, I'm good at this. Like, I can see myself getting better at it and using it for either visual or graphics or doing databases. So I love looking at data too. And that's some of the things that I've looked at as far as computer science goes. But people told me that I shouldn't go into computer science. I've had people tell me that I should go into engineering. I've had people tell me, no, just do your artwork because that's what you're good at. And, you know, there's so much racism within all of the other industries when it comes to STEM fields. So it's been all over the place. And at the end of the day, I felt I have to do what's good for me. And I feel what's good for me is continuing on with what I believe is going to make me happy. And so the whole computer science piece of this is at the end of the day, about 20, 25 years from now, being in industry with computer programming, I want to create my own nonprofit.
That's the long-term goal.
That's my long-term goal. I want to be able to create a nonprofit teaching children that are low-income, first-generational youth, that teaching them computer programming skills, practical skills, and getting them comfortable with it. And hopefully by then they also have it more within schools as it is. But I want to be able to give these kids a space to practice coding and then show them the careers that go with that. And then in hopes of them being able to get into higher financial brackets, and not having to stress in life. I want to be able to give them those practical skills.
Let me ask you, I just want to ask a question that somebody in the audience might be thinking mm-hmm. right now, because right now there are a lot of opportunities mm-hmm. for kids to code, mm-hmm. and that's 2017. What you're talking about is 2042.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think that the coding needs will even be the same 25 years from now?
Probably not. The way that technology goes, it changes at an instant. And so for me, that's my dreams and aspirations now, and it might change several times before I get there. It'll probably be something different within technology, but it definitely will aim towards those same kids and that same population, because as we know, that we're struggling when it comes to bridging that gap between rich and poor. And so for me, there's still going to be that need in the community anywhere. And that's what I'm more so focusing on.
I read a story one time about an engineer who became a doctor. Mm-hmm. And he created the insulin pump. Because as a doctor, he saw the need to have something that regularly delivered insulin to people who needed insulin. Mm-hmm. And as an engineer, he saw a way to do it. So do you think that with your knowledge of civil engineering, your growing knowledge of computer programming, your knowledge of business administration, do you think that and your love of art, do you think that that sort of like creates a hybrid in you to be able to create things that are beyond all of those?
Oh, wow. I've looked at a lot of different master's programs, actually, combining both art and computer science, art, engineering. And I feel like my biggest advantage when it comes to having all of these different skills and knowledge and passion for is that it's helped me in areas where if I was just learning one. So when it comes to the engineering, I've been told by a lot of my advisors, wow, you're super creative. So when you go into a situation, not only can you speak on what you're designing or creating or what you're envisioning, but we know that you can put visuals behind it, with, let's say, in a PowerPoint, or be able to talk about it in a way that will inspire people to jump on board. Because at the end of the day, you can have all the skills, you can design whatever you want, but people will not fund it if you cannot, what is the word? If you can't persuade them right. that we need it.
Yeah, it's like essentially you speak four professional languages.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
So quickly, let's talk about the money-making aspect. Okay, mm-hmm. This is what's paying the bills for you right now.
This and school's pretty much paying me the rest of it. So I do take out some loans with school, and then I also do my artwork. And it's helped me so far. Like, I'm able to pay my rent. I'm able to, you know, put food in my dorm. Yeah, my refrigerator.
Well, so. I see. I mean, on the wall right now, you have two sold pieces.
Yes.
I mean, that's that's,
and then this one just sold last night.
Oh, so then that's about $700.
Yeah.
right there. So, talk a little bit about, for anyone else who's out there, you know, wanting to pursue a career in art. How do you go about selling your pieces, and mm-hmm. how do you go about negotiating things like copyright and commission and things like that?
Definitely. So for the first part, my advice to anyone who is looking to sell their art pieces is to put it out there. Actually, put it on social media and have people see your artwork. Because for the longest time, I didn't show any of my artwork. I kept it to myself. I kept it in my my space because I thought, you know, I didn't really think how people would react to it. And there was that that bit in me that was afraid of what people would say about it.
Right. But I see online you have a Pinterest account, you have an mm-hmm. Instagram account, mm-hmm. you have a Facebook
All
account.
All of that's grown
Twitter.
Within the last 6 months.
Facebook.
So in the summer, that's when I decided that I really wanted to move forward with my artwork, that I was done with putting it in the rear view mirror. I wanted to move it up front. If I was going to stay with my aspirations of being both an engineer and an artist, at this point it's going towards computer science, but if I were going to be both of those, then I would need to be putting attention into both of them at the same time. And so I created my first business, Art by Sade. I put up my website. I took some pictures of my work and put that on there as well. I opened up social media accounts.
And you, just getting back to the website, you built that website, right?
No, I didn't build that website. I have a friend, Major Uni, who does web design. And I was talking to him about my ideas of what I wanted to do with my artwork. And he said, wow, you know, I'm coming out with this new tools to create websites, and you should really give it a try. And so when I go in there, I can create it. I just, you know, drag and drop what I want. And I really enjoy that aspect of it because I can essentially create whatever I want on my website and what I want to focus on. And so I put that website together in that sense, that I created the look and the feel of it. And then I also went and got my logo created. So I have a logo created for my website, business cards, and all of that. As far as the copyright and
sales and all
that stuff. Sales and that, what that, so I do commission pieces. And when I work on a commission piece, once they get the piece in their hand, it's theirs. And I do that through a bill of sale, and I have art contracts as well. And once we go through that, then it's their piece.
Right, and they can do anything they want. They can use that image in art, advertising, whatever they want.
They can do whatever they want with that piece. It is theirs. Usually the people that I work with, though, are putting it up in their house.
So then does that mean then, let's say that you create an original piece. You mm-hmm. create an original piece.
Mm-hmm.
And you sell that original piece, but then maybe you've created prints.
Mm-hmm.
Can you use the prints if the original piece belongs to them? I mean, how does that
work? So the pieces that I do make into prints, I have talked to the person about it for the original. So, for instance, this piece right here, she was an original piece. And when I talked to the person who wanted to purchase it, I said, well, this piece is going to be auctioned. And she said, I want to get it. I want to get this piece before you even auction it off. I said, okay. Afterwards, this piece will be made into prints as well. And she said, I just want the piece. I just want the original piece of it. And you'll see that a lot with art. Local artists where they do original pieces, but then they do prints because you can sell more of them at a lower cost. And then people who don't necessarily have the amount of money to purchase an original, they can get their prints.
Right.
So I usually have a conversation with the person who you know, wants the original piece. And then also with Afro Puffs over here, she is in Abbey Creek right now being shown. I put her on my social media sites, and she's just gone off the charts with it. I have over 15 print sales right now just off of her in the last 2 days. And someone contacted me and said, I really want the original piece, even though there's prints out there. And she knows that that's how she saw it, was through the print. She said, I don't want a print. I want the original piece. And so there's an understanding, too, with there's prints being made and originals. Most of the people, like I said, who come to me are everyday, you know, people who just want artwork on their walls and want to feel some type of way when they walk into a room. So I've never really had an issue with the prints versus the originals aspect of the art world. Now, for this next project that I'm going to be working on, Bertone has talked to me about creating a label for his new Aphrodite wine, a rosé wine that he's coming out with. And so I've sketched out three pieces, and I'm going to be painting them. And the conversation that we had is, you know, the difference between, you know, do I get a percentage off of the bottles for each label that's on there, or do I just commission all of the pieces to him? And then that way, he's got rights on it. And so that's something that I'm learning as I'm, I guess, being an active artist. Right. is I learn it as I go.
And that's the whole reason why I wanted to bring it up, is because for anybody who has an idea or who has a passion for something, it can seem daunting to know which hoops to jump through,
yeah,
which hallways to walk down, mm-hmm, who to talk to. And the stuff is not impossible. It's not impossible to have the right conversations, mm-hmm, to think things through, to consult information that's out there and figure it out. So this is just a way to say, if you have something that you're passionate about and you want to bring to life, it is possible, and you don't need to pay, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, you know, for attorneys and all that other, mm-hmm, stuff. I mean, you can start out with basic information and just sort of work your way through.
Work
from
your way up. Definitely. My next step would be to create an LLC, a limited liability company, and with my artwork, once I get bigger with it, and then also work on refining my contracts and the process of how I sell my artwork. And that's stuff that I can see myself getting to in the near future. So with, for example, with the labels that I'll be doing for the wine, we're going more towards commissioning the pieces out, because that way it's just clean cut. If he's got the pieces and they're commissioned to him, he owns them and the rights of them. And then we don't have to worry about later on him putting it, let's say that he wants to put them on different things. Let's say he wants to, you know, make huge banners of them, or he wants to do a different project with them.
You don't have to renegotiate prices or anything.
You don't have to renegotiate anything. They're his. And I think it also works the same way. If I were to keep the pieces and then him use the labels on the bottle, well, what if I, you know, went out and made prints of them or sold them? But that's his label. Mm-hmm. So I think these are things, like I said, that I'm learning on the way, and it's better to negotiate those terms out before, you know, going forward with on both parties, just whatever you want to do with them. So I always have that conversation with people with commission pieces. Those are just theirs. I don't take commission pieces and make prints of them. That's their piece. It's their original piece. But like with these pieces, yeah, I'll make prints. People can take the originals, and we have that conversation, so they know.
So I guess to sort of wrap all this up, you got a lot going on.
I do have a lot going on.
I mean, you are really a badass.
No, thank you. I've been very busy with the last few months.
Do you see yourself, and how old are you?
I'm 23.
So then, do you see yourself continuing to have this kind of fire in the belly for how many years?
I feel like in order to get where I need to go, that I will have to continue to have fire in my belly to get what I want. For me, I've never liked the feeling of being... what is the word for it?
I'm thinking you might be thinking complacent.
Complacent, comfortable. I've always wanted to go out and do more and be more. So for me right now, that's looking like me getting up in the morning around 6-7 o'clock. I just finished my internship with Providence, where I was working 30 hours a week. And so I would get up early. I had to drive to Newburgh because I was working for Lifeline at the time. And that took about an hour of my day. And then I would work for 6-7 hours and then drive an hour back. Then I would have to go to school. I go to school full time. So I go to school through lecture, come home, do homework. And then from 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock, that's when I'm painting. That's when I'm in the mood and mode to get my artwork done.
Now, you're talking about 11 o'clock at night until 2 o'clock in the morning.
In the morning, yes. And then I get a few hours of sleep, and then I do it all over again. And it's because I said to myself, this is what I want to make happen. If I want my artwork to happen, for me, I don't envision... I never envisioned me getting super big with my artwork until maybe 10, 15 years. So it's also being patient.
I think the long view.
I don't think anything really happens overnight. And it might, you know, it could take one person seeing my artwork and then that changing everything. But for me, I've always played the slow and steady, think things out for long term.
Can I ask you a question about the people that you surround yourself with, you know, as we talk about the long view? Because, you know, it seems to me that sometimes the society, the culture, has a lot of get-rich-quick, superstar, you know, in a weekend kind of stories, and everyone thinks, well, not everyone, but many people come away with the impression that, you know, that can happen to me. And I know that, you know, in my own life, sometimes hanging around the wrong people really kind of gets in your way, mm-hmm. rather than helps you on your way.
Yeah, I've had to stop a lot of friendships based on that. And that's just even with going to college. And you have to change who's around you to move forward, unless you want to be hindered and stay back, if that person isn't good for you and what you're trying to become. So for me, I surround myself around a lot of people who are doing a lot of different things to get to where they want. So I'm around, for instance, one of my friends, Tare, he works two jobs. He goes to school full time. He is president of his chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, Rho Beta chapter, at Portland State University. He does a whole bunch of different things, and that's where I have to surround myself too if I want to do multiple things to get to where I want. And so I do my best to surround myself with people who are always busy, always busy. And I pick up little things from them that helps me along the way too. And I have a lot of mentors and I have a lot of advisors. And one of my mentors, Marlon Marion, he works at Portland State University over Access, which is for Black and African students who come in as either transfer students or freshmen, and they're navigating Portland State University. And when I first met him, he was just working, and he's starting up a family now. And now he's starting up a family, home ownership, and doing his PhD right now in sociology. So seeing him do everything and still work full time with us, there's never a moment where he doesn't have a student in his room. And that's the energy that I feed off of.
Talk a little bit about family. I mean, you mm-hmm. mentioned family. How is family looking at what you're doing and how you're going about doing it?
Yeah, my mom growing up, she always told me to have a hustle. She was like, you always have to have a hustle. And as a kid, we would go to Winko's and get big bags of candy. And then she was like, okay, go to school now and then sell each piece of candy for 25 cents. So there was always a hustle that I had. I never really saw my art becoming a hustle. And it was just something that I was passionate about and something that I loved to do. And now I can make, you know, that residual income from doing my work while doing school. And my mom has been very encouraging and giving me the motivation to continue to get my work out there to other people. She talks about my artwork at her job, so people are always like, oh, I love seeing new work, and you know, when is this going to become a print and stuff like that. And then I have a very supportive boyfriend too, who gets my work in front of people who he thinks would, you know, enjoy it, close friends, relatives. And so I have a lot of support when it comes to my artwork and also being able to maintain my schoolwork and whatever internship or job that I take at the time too, to make extra income. So it's been a lot. I haven't seen them very much in the last few months because I'm so busy, but they're always sending me supportive text messages and calling me. And so I feel like I'm pretty much rooted, and I'm able then to know that I'm taken care of, that I'm good with, you know, my relationships, and that I can do what I need to do.
And the last thing, really, is sort of about the art that you've chosen to do and why you've chosen to do it. And it's also about, you know, Black folks having a hustle, and it's about Black folks in this society, mm-hmm. and how, you know, we're still working really hard. Some of us are still working really hard to legitimize ourselves. And I know that a lot of us really are getting tired of feeling like we have to do that.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, you know, when you do this work, when you present these women, when you are having your hustle, when you have these long-term goals, are you doing it for, you know, to help people see I am legitimate? Or are you doing it because this is my passion and I don't really care if you get my legitimacy or not? Or are you doing it because, you know, there are young people coming up who need role models? Mm. It's like, you know, there's a lot of reasons that could contribute to, you know, making things better, or ignoring the haters, or passing things on to the next generation. I mean, like, what is it?
For me, it was the dream of being able to fill a space with familiarity, filling that space with, and being able to see yourself, see myself as Black women, and then also to sorry, lost my train of thought for that, but self-esteem, confidence, being able to do what you want when you please. And I wouldn't necessarily say that it's to legitimize myself.
Saying that.
Oh, okay.
What I was saying is a lot of Black people in this country, especially at this time, seem to have a need to... I remember back in the 1950s during the, you know, Selma marches, Black men were wearing these t-shirts that said, I am a man, mm-hmm. as if to say, I have to remind you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, I mean, I also know that, you know, with all of the political issues, police issues, mm-hmm. people still have to see a lot of Black folks feel like they still have to say, excuse me, you know, I'm a human being too, mm-hmm. and the life I'm living is just as valuable, and the work I'm doing is just as important. And that's not to say that through this work that's what you're doing, but what I was asking is, you know, there are a lot of messages in this work. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering, you know, is the message of, you know, take me seriously in there? Mm. Or is it a message of young people, look at what I'm doing and use me as a guide to help launch yourself?
Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. is it a way to say, I'm self-empowering myself and I don't really care about needing anybody else's approval?
Gotcha. Yeah, it's, I would say that it's more leaning towards being an example for other people, for younger people. I know that I just got a shout out on Instagram, and there was a painting that this person did, and they, you know, tagged me in it, and they said, you inspired me to paint again. You inspired me to pick this up again. And or whatever the talent may be. And I think the biggest thing too for us when we go off to college is we're told to, we're either told follow your passions, go on what you want, or go into STEM, go into something that's gonna make you a lot of money. I say that you can do both. I don't think that we should put ourselves in a box and say, this is where I'm gonna go and this is all I'm gonna do. And I'm hoping that through this, not only can, you know, black boys or girls, you know, play their sports or dance or whatever it is that they're passionate about, but that they also can pick up other skill sets. You know, and for me, that it works out. And I love being able to be versatile. It's just like with my pieces, like when I look at them, they're all versatile and the hair is versatile. We should be just as versatile as our hair. Like, we can do so many different things. And I feel that we put ourselves in the box, like you were talking earlier. We might think that we're not capable of doing things that we don't traditionally see ourselves in. And for me, that's computer science and being an artist at the same time.
Okay. Sade Beasley, it has been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you as well.